Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fear the size. You step for all the times, the times I
welcome thrive. To Court Appointed, Stu's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am still just a dude.
Still just a dude.
Won't be adding much to that title anytime soon.
Well, you never know. I mean, you could maybe be knighted by the queen, or you could apply to become a Kentucky colonel or something along those lines.
Kentucky fried chicken.
You always were a little extra crispy.
Yeah, that's right. A little extra crunchy. I could be a lawyer, dude, judge, and I could be retired.
Have you ever seen that on people's walls where they have a Kentucky colonel on their wall?
Yeah, I've asked about that before because it used to be because I did when I worked for the railroad, I would be over in Kentucky in parts of it. And a lot of the people on the railroad had those things in their office. And all you do is just pay some kind of send in something, fill out a form and pay some kind of money and they send you one.
Yeah.
It's not like you earn it or anything. It's not like you have to do something noble or nothing. You just have to give them money.
You don't have to go fry a chicken or anything.
No. Or race a horse or prove you have blue blood or bluegrass or something.
I think maybe we should do that for you so we can add one more honorary thing to your title there.
And a Kentucky colonel. But it doesn't mean nothing.
Well, you know, hey.
I want something that means something. Like Esquire.
We can call you Thomas Booth Smurl Esquire.
Or Squire. I could become a squire. That's what I could be. I could help some knight become a knight or whatever. Didn't a knight have a squire that helped him get on and off his horse and get dressed and stuff like that?
I think so. And they tightened the straps on their armor.
Yeah. See, I could be a squire, maybe. Squire Tom.
Well, I have a couple updates for today's episode.
Well, good. Yeah. We always like updates.
So, the last episode, we discussed the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover.
We did.
And what came up, which usually comes up when you talk about J. Edgar Hoover, was his penchant for supposedly wearing women's clothing.
Yes.
And that has apparently been pretty much debunked by historians.
What?
Yeah. There was one of our listeners was on Twitter and tweeted at me and told me the lowdown about how historians have researched it. And it appears that it was actually just a rumor made up by someone who was out to get J. Edgar Hoover.
You mean kind of like he did?
Exactly. Just like the rumors that he was spreading about people during that same time frame.
Oh, you got a dose of his own medicine, huh?
Yeah, so maybe there is a little bit of karma there, even if it's not true.
Well, I don't know about that. But part of his reason, I never read that anywhere. I've read about the cross-dressing thing a lot of times, but I never read that it had been debunked. But one of his points of proof was that they said that his cross-dressing name was Mary and that no one would pick the name Mary to have. And it's like, what do you mean? In that day and age, you couldn't swing a dead cat around without hitting a Mary somewhere. There was lots of Marys. You don't have them so much now, just like Tommies. You don't have Tommies now. You don't have Marys much of all, but that was in the time period. That was a popular name.
Well, I think when they made Mary and Tommy, speaking of you and your wife, that they broke the mold.
Well, I know I'm moldy.
Now, the other interesting update, too, has to do with the death penalty. We had talked about that previously before.
Yeah.
And in Texas, there's an inmate named Ruben Gutierrez, and he was set to be executed last week. And the U.S. Supreme Court intervened at the last minute, actually 1 hour before he was set to be executed, and granted his motion to stay the execution.
How come?
Well, they had some pretty good grounds for it, honestly.
Yeah?
There was already a four-month delay in any executions in Texas because of COVID-19 going on. So.
Well, yeah, they wouldn't want him to catch a disease that might kill him before the state could kill him. That would be ludicrous.
Yeah, it's keeping the hangman from having a job, I guess, or something.
That's
I don't know.
Bad for business. Yeah.
Bad for business. So his argument was that his religious rights were being violated because he was not allowed a chaplain to accompany him into the death chamber. Last year, when we talked about this before, there was a Supreme Court ruling which halted the execution of Patrick Murphy because he wanted to have a Buddhist advisor with him at his execution. And the Texas Department of Corrections has a rule that says you're allowed to have clergy with you. But they did not want to allow him to have a Buddhist advisor. They just want him to have the regular old prison clergy there with him.
Sure. And
since evidently he was a Buddhist or wanted a Buddhist advisor there, he filed a motion to stay his execution. And they actually halted it because of that, because they didn't allow him to have the Buddhist advisor in there. In response to that ruling, Texas said, fine, you know what? We'll do away with having any clergy in there, or no one of any faith in there, and we're only going to have security staff in there. So they just kind of took their ball and went home with it.
All right.
And according to Gutierrez's attorney, he was Catholic, and he was apparently a devout Catholic, and his faith requires the assistance of clergy to help him pass from life into the afterlife. And the Texas Department of Criminal Justice changed its policy for its own convenience, but spiritual comfort at the time of death is not a convenience. It's a legal right.
Well, I think he was just trying to get out of being executed, because if you confess your sin in the Catholic religion, if you confess to a priest, then you're no longer guilty. You're absolved of your wrongdoing.
Well, I think also if you're wearing a brown scapular when you die too, I think that helps out. Or maybe it's a green one. I can't remember. One's for venial and one's for mortal. I don't know which is which.
Well, yeah, but that's just which direction you're headed once you die. I'm talking about getting you out of it altogether. Once you confess and the priests absolve you, you're not guilty. They got to let you out of prison then.
I don't think that's how it works, especially not in Texas.
Well, what? God's law isn't more than man's law?
That's a different podcast. So the Supreme Court said if it were to rule in Gutierrez's favor, it would ask a lower court to determine, based on whatever evidence the parties provide, whether serious security problems would result for a prisoner facing execution if they're permitted to choose the spiritual advisor of their choice. So they didn't actually side with him. They just said that not having any spiritual advisor in there is enough of a reason to halt the execution. There's still not a determination about whether or not that's legal or not. If his execution had gone forward, that would have actually been the first inmate in Texas to receive lethal injection since February 6th, and only the second U.S. inmate to be put to death since states began to reopen after the pandemic shut down the U.S.
Well, I think that we've had that death sentence, the execution discussion before, and death penalty is just an uneconomical decision to have in the first place. There's too much extra appeals and things to do and all this other kind of stuff. They should just do away with the death penalty and put them in jail for good.
I agree. I have no problem with that, and I think that's the right way. And when you put somebody to death, it's so final. If there ever is any evidence they actually didn't do it, there's no going back on it.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you discover DNA, hey, by the way, so-and-so is innocent. Dig him up and tell him.
Yeah.
It doesn't do him much good. So if you put him in jail for life and then find out, well, then at least whatever few good years I have left, they get to spend free.
Yeah.
So
that reminds me of the Naked Gun movie. They're cleaning out Frank Drebin's desk, and he said, there's the evidence in the so-and-so case. My God, he was innocent. He goes, Frank, he received the electric chair 3 years ago. He's like, That was a Naked Gun joke.
Well, I know what I'm going to do if I ever find myself on death row. I'll just say that I'm of the religion of leprechauns, and I need a leprechaun in the room before you can kill me, and that way I should be pretty safe. I'll be damned if they'll find a leprechaun in Texas.
Yeah, you have to be watch out, though. They might be after your Lucky Charms, though.
Yeah, they're magically delicious.
Indeed they are. You could actually ask for Lucky Charms as your last meal and ask to have a leprechaun present and kind of do like a whole theme there.
I don't know. I'd hate to ask for the Lucky Charms and then suddenly a leprechaun jumps out of the box, because then I just screwed myself.
Speaking of Irish...
Damn you, Lucky Charms.
Speaking of Irish cuisine, have you ever had a Scotch egg?
Oh, yeah. I love Scotch eggs.
Me too. There's no place around here that I found them.
No. I think the place where we have had them the most time is at Universal and Disney. They have them down there in different restaurants that are English themed. That's the mother country's cuisine.
Yeah. I like a Scotch egg with a little HP sauce on it.
HP sauce? House payment?
No, I think it's kind of like, I'm probably wrong here, but I believe it's the British equivalent of A1 steak sauce. Kind of very similar.
Oh. Okay. Well, I like A1 on a steak.
Yeah, HP sauce is pretty tasty.
Hmm. Okay. Well, but Scotch eggs, yes. I greatly endorse them.
Yeah. I'm going to have a Scotch egg here before too long. I haven't had one in quite some time. My Scotch egg level is getting dangerously low.
Learn how to make one.
I did actually Google a recipe, and it was making a baked one. So yeah. Maybe I will check it out.
All right. Well, if you make them successfully, let me know. I'll eat your leftovers.
If I successfully make Scotch eggs, Tommy, there will not be any leftovers. This much I promise you.
That sounds like me and my butts.
Now, this guy that was set to be you and your butts. That one just flew over the radar. Under the radar there.
You know, the butts that I barbecue on the grill.
You do like to smoke a butt.
I do. Nothing like a good smoked butt.
No joke in that. That's honest to God truth. The guy who was set to be executed in Texas he's always maintained his innocence and said that he didn't do it and that there's DNA evidence that would clear him, but they've never actually overturned it and never done that. So, I mean, he's one of those guys that has maintained his innocence and is fighting tooth and nail to stay out of the death penalty there. So,
well, you know, I guess you have nothing to lose.
Yeah. The prosecutor said that once again, justice has been denied and that this changes nothing and only delays his ultimate fate. So the prosecutor was very
adamant that he's going to finish the deal.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, this episode, that was kind of some long updates there, but this episode, we thought we would talk about something that kind of hits home for us here as some West Virginians. And June 20th, which was a couple days ago, is West Virginia Day.
It's West Virginia's birthday.
That's right. On June 20th, 1863, West Virginia officially became a state.
Yeehaw! That's the official birthday welcoming. Yeehaw! Yeah, something like that.
So the story of how West Virginia became a state goes back to the Civil War. Shortly after Virginia seceded from the Union in May of 1861, representatives from the Northwest counties met in Wheeling to form the reorganized government of Virginia, which remained loyal to the Union. And when we say we're talking about those territories, we're basically talking about the areas that became West Virginia. So what they did is they met and decided, hey, we're Virginia as well, and we don't agree with leaving the Union, so we are going to be the actual Virginia government that is still loyal to the Union. So they were the reorganized government of Virginia.
Yeah, and it actually happened. I mean, they actually started forming a thought before Virginia seceded, because Virginia, when they met and they were talking about seceding, the people pretty much unanimously from that part of Virginia, which basically, you have the Appalachian Mountains that go through the middle of Virginia, and the eastern side was for seceding, and the western side was against it. And they got together there at that, and they said, look, if this is the direction you all are going, we're not sure we're going to follow you. And that's when they went back to Wheeling and started forming their plans for if the vote went that way.
So soon after they formed the reorganized government, they authorized a referendum on whether or not to form a state out of the new region. And voters endorsed the concept, like you said, because people in West Virginia didn't want to leave the Union. They wanted to still be part of the United States. And whenever you have a new government like that, they always have a constitutional convention. So they had a constitutional convention. Article 1, Section 2 of the resulting state constitution defined the proposed state's territory as including 44 named counties and four more, Pendleton, Hardy, Hampshire, and Morgan, if the voters in those counties chose to join the new state. If they did, then the counties of Berkeley, Jefferson, and Frederick would also, upon voter approval, be included in West Virginia. So these are the kind of the border states that were closer to Virginia, right there on the border of what is now West Virginia and Virginia. And a referendum on the Constitution passed in April 1862, and the first four additional counties opted to go with West Virginia. So there was no vote taken at that time in Berkeley, Jefferson, and Frederick, because those were actually controlled by the Confederacy, and they weren't able to take votes there.
Because the Confederacy frowned upon that.
They did. They didn't like people seceding from their secession.
Yeah. We've already successfully succeeded. We don't need more succeeding unsuccessfully going on.
In May of 1862, the reorganized government gave its consent to the formation of the new state consisting of 48 counties plus Berkeley, Jefferson, and Frederick whenever the voter of said counties assented. Congress agreed to the creation of West Virginia in December of 1862, conditioned on a constitutional change regarding the elimination of slavery. So Congress said, we'll let you in the Union, but you need to have something in your Constitution that eliminates slavery or says it's not allowed, which that was not really a big deal in West Virginia, because West Virginians, by and large, were not really slaveholders. I mean, there were some, but for the most part, the larger slaveholder portions of Virginia were on the East Coast.
Yeah, it said, settlement of the western lands of Virginia came gradually in the 18th century as settlers slowly made their way across the natural Allegheny Plateau barrier. The region became increasingly important to the Virginia state government at Richmond in the 19th century, but the prevalence of small farms and absence of slavery began to estrange it from the East. Because slaves were counted in allotting representation, wealthy Eastern planters dominated the Virginia legislature, and demands by Western Virginians for lower taxes and infrastructure development were not met. So you were talking about a state that was so big that the people that made it up really had diverging goals of what they wanted. You had the mostly English rich plantation owners that owned slaves in the eastern part, and then you cross the mountains, and the makeup of that was small, poor farmers that had, you know, didn't have the luxuries that they had in the East, and it was mostly of German and Scotch-Irish descent. So you had different backgrounds of the people, so they, of course, had different ways of looking at things. So they also were fiercely loyal people, and the thought of being forced to break away from the country did not appeal to them in the least. They didn't see the value in it, and they didn't think it was right. And they said, West is West, by God, Virginia, and we ain't a-going.
Some of the quotes that were given during the Constitutional Convention in Wheeling were pretty epic quotes, actually, in my opinion. There was one that said, they were talking about if they didn't leave Virginia and form their own state, it said, the soil upon which we stand will no longer be the soil of the United States. They also said, it requires stout hearts to execute this purpose. It requires men of courage, of unfaltering determination. So they were very harsh, not harsh, but very dead set on staying with the United States. They didn't want to leave the United States. Like you said, people here were very loyal to the U.S. and didn't really think that that was the right thing to do.
And that bleeds into the culture of today, because I've seen the statistic before that West Virginia has more people in the military per capita than any other state in the Union. So that's not total number, but per capita, a large proportion of our young people join the military in some form.
Yeah. And West Virginia was essentially a state born of conviction.
Kind of child born of rebellion.
That's right. A child born of rebellion. So kind of the funny thing is, too, is Virginia's reaction once West Virginia decided that they were going to leave Virginia.
The president of the Confederacy, of course, was Jefferson Davis, and in his memoirs, he wrote with considerable bitterness on the creation of West Virginia. He was quoted as saying, "When the state convention at Richmond passed an ordinance of secession, which was subsequently ratified by a 60,000 majority, it was as valid an act for the people of Virginia as was ever passed by a representative body. The legally expressed decision of the majority was the true voice of the state. When, therefore, disorderly persons in the northwest counties assembled and declared the ordinance of secession to be null and void, they rose up against the authority of the state. The subsequent organization of the state of West Virginia and its separation from the state of Virginia were acts of secession. Thus, we have in their movements insurrection, revolution, and secession. To admit a state under such a government is entirely unauthorized, revolutionary, subversive of the Constitution, and destructive of the union of states." Now, how can they be saying that when they'd already vote to seceded? They'd already done the same disloyalty and everything else. But the fact was that their very secession is what opened the door for West Virginia. Because West Virginia, when they went back and they said, well, you can't form a state, the way the Constitution read, you can't form a state without permission, a separate state without permission from the state you're seceding from.
Exactly.
So what happened by Virginia seceding, they no longer existed. So West Virginia, as being the reformative state of Virginia, they were now in a position where they were the state. They declared, "We are Virginia, yeah, and we're going to call ourselves West Virginia because the other Virginia left. Thank you. They're out the door. Bye, Felicia. We are now West Virginia."
I still think it's pretty funny that Virginia is crying about constitutionality and all those different things whenever they're the ones who just thumbed their nose at the United States to begin with.
Yeah, and even though you think that it would be an easy decision, it's just like when, you know, we talked about before, our forefathers that signed the Declaration of Independence. It's an easy decision, right? Of course you want to be free. Right. Well, no, it wasn't, because it came at a great cost. You put your name up as a bounty when you signed that Declaration of Independence, because the English powers were going to come after you. Yeah. So this was not an easy decision either.
It's very similar to the American Revolution as well, what took place here.
Yeah, and so, like, even for Abraham Lincoln, here's people that are saying, "We're pledging our loyalty to the Union." You'd think it'd be a no-brainer, but even Lincoln had his doubts about the legality of admitting West Virginia to the Union. He said, "We can scarcely dispense with the aid of West Virginia in this struggle, much less can we afford to have her against us, in Congress and in the field. Her brave and good men regard her admission into the Union as a matter of life and death. They have been true to the Union under many severe trials. The division of a state is as dreaded as a precedent, but a measure expedient by war is no precedent for times of peace." So basically he was saying, while he doesn't think under ordinary circumstances that if a group of counties got together and decided they were secede from another state, that he would not back that, in times of war such as this, that it was something that had to be done.
And really, that division, the state was already apart to begin with. The mountains separated the east from the west quite a bit. And Arthur Borman, who was the first governor, was quoted as saying, "The east has always looked upon that portion of the state of west of the mountains as sort of an outside appendage. The unfairness and inequality of legislation is manifest on every page of the statute book." So all the laws had always favored the eastern part of Virginia. And also historians have said, the Civil War was not the cause of the formation of West Virginia, it was the opportunity. They looked at that as a way to get away from what they thought were the shackles of the rest of the state and the monopoly and attitude from Richmond.
Yeah, and in other words, the seeds of West Virginia had already been planted before the Civil War took place. And it's been stated many times that West Virginia becoming a state was more, instead of a matter of, well, this is, we're forced to do this, it was really a matter of opportunity, that they saw the opportunity to stay with the United States and to break away from Virginia as their way of having some autonomy, because they didn't like the rule they were living under from Virginia. So when the war broke out, there were some people, believe it or not, in West Virginia or the western part of Virginia that were smart enough to figure out, hey, you know what? This is our opportunity to float this boat.
Yeah.
And they too, went like about said, it in the right way.
And also, as you said, too, there was a strong Union sentiment as well. There was an open letter that was written by a committee of different West Virginia politicians in May of 1861, and it said, "Are we submissionists, craven cowards who will yield to daring ambition? The Union under the flag of our common country causes our bosoms to glow with patriotic heat and our hearts to swell with the honest love of country." So you had a lot of people who were pretty proud patriots here in West Virginia. We're just not going to take this lying down. They felt that this was the final straw. You've ignored us this entire time, and now you have the audacity to remove us from the United States? No, no. You open the door, and now we're going to go ahead and leave.
And in Richmond, they said, the question arises, was this new government a sincere effort on the part of loyal Virginians, or was it a subterfuge to enable separatists to set up an entirely new state separated from the parent state?
Yeah.
So there were arguments both ways. But what it reminded me a lot of is when they did vote on the Declaration of Independence, they made the decision that it had to be a unanimous vote, because they didn't feel it was right for the majority of states to force the minority of states basically to go to war with England. So they felt like it had to be unanimous, because everybody had to be in it together, or it wasn't right to subject everybody else to it. So this was the same kind of thing, is the people in the western part of Virginia were saying, we don't want to leave. We don't want to go to war with our country. That's our country, and we don't want to go to war with them, and we don't want you to make us. So, you know, they didn't see it that way. If Virginia had looked at it that way, they would have said every county would have needed to agree to it.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Every county in West Virginia decided to become West Virginia.
Right. And then you even had the few that were on the border that were offered the opportunity. And then something came up here not too long ago. I think it was gun laws that were enacted in Virginia. And our governor, Justice, offered some of these counties that had been on the border and never had really voted on the action, did they want to come join West Virginia now? And I said, there is no way in hell that's going to happen.
Well, Frederick County was one of the ones that I mentioned. And they actually never held the vote. So
yeah, still pending 200 years later or whatever. Yeah,
they could have voted to come join West Virginia.
Yeah. Come on, y'all.
Now, after West Virginia was formed, obviously the Civil War ended, and the Virginia legislature, which was now back in the hands of the original Virginia, the eastern part of, eastern Virginia, they repealed its laws consenting to the admission of Berkeley and Jefferson counties into West Virginia. And then they took the matter to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they argued that when Congress approved statehood for West Virginia, those counties were not included, and the relevant statute made no mention of the later addition. Virginia also alleged that Berkeley and Jefferson votes to join West Virginia were fraudulent and therefore should have been void. And this actually came before the Supreme Court in Virginia versus West Virginia, and by a 6-3 vote, Virginia's claims were rejected. The Supreme Court held that the statutes of the reorganized government regarding Berkeley and Jefferson effectively created an agreement between the two states that the counties would become part of West Virginia whenever voters assented. Congress had validly approved that, too. The application for statehood had been carefully considered, and Congress had made an admission contingent upon voter approval of the constitutional change regarding slavery. Now, the court never actually talked about the constitutionality of West Virginia statehood, even though its validity had actually been questioned. But the result in Virginia v. West Virginia pretty much settled the matter for all practical purposes, that West Virginia was indeed constitutionally a valid state and everything was the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, and everybody didn't take it lying down. There was a lot of debate, and there was other states involved in it, too, that kind of I thought was kind of amazing that they would worry about it. But you had a representative, Joseph Seeger of Virginia, was alone in his delegation opposing West Virginia statehood. He maintained in a House debate that there is no evidence that the majority of people within the counties which were to compose the new state had ever given its assent to its formation. He called the statehood bill a punitive measure chastening Virginia. because what he's saying is each county sent two representatives to this convention in Wheeling to vote on this, and that's how it came about. So you didn't have a majority of people, the inhabitants that voted for it. You had those representatives that did. So that's why he was against it. In the same theme, Representative James Blaine of Maine argued that essentially the government of West Virginia was giving permission to the formation of a new state of West Virginia. Representative Thaddeus Stevens of Pennsylvania expressed an opinion held by many. We may admit West Virginia as a new state, but not by virtue of any provision of the Constitution, but under an absolute power which the laws of war give us. I shall vote for this bill upon that theory, for I will not stultify, I never heard the word stultify, myself by supposing that we have any warrant in the Constitution for this process. But even after West Virginia was admitted to the Union, Senator Davis of Kentucky objected to seating its senators in the upper house. I hold that there is legally and constitutionally no such state in existence as the state of West Virginia. So Kentucky, he doesn't recognize us. And consequently, no senators from such a state. My object is simply to raise a question to be put upon the record and to have my name as a senator recorded against the recognition of West Virginia as a state of the United States. I do not believe the Old Dominion, like a polypus, can be separated into different segments and each segment become a living constitutional organism in this mode. The present state of West Virginia, as it is, has been organized and it is seeking representation on the floor of the Senate as flagrant violation of the Constitution. And to this present day, Virginia does not recognize the restored government of Virginia in its list of state administrations or the validity of the secession by West Virginia.
Now, what, yeah, so not everybody was for it, but that's
no, okay. No. But even other states, you got Maine and Pennsylvania and then Kentucky, they did. They would, I'm not even going to speak to those people. They're not real people. They don't count.
I know. Now, one of the interesting things is when West Virginia formed its new constitution, their constitution agreed to pay the portion of Virginia's debt in helping build roads, canals, railroads, and other public improvements that were in the new state. But West Virginia actually never paid these debts. They said, hey, we're going to pay these, but they never did. And in 1911, the state of Virginia sued West Virginia for these debts. So kind of the interesting argument here is that by suing West Virginia for these debts in 1911, they actually acknowledged that West Virginia was a legitimate state because they were trying to get the debts back from them, which I thought that was kind of a sneaky way of saying, we gotcha.
Okay.
You gotta admit we're a state now.
Yeah, if you say we're a state, we'll give you some money.
Yeah. So there was a court case about that, and the Supreme Court held that West Virginia did indeed have to pay Virginia for those, and it was actually finally paid in 1920. So it has been paid off.
That's good. We don't want to still owe them anything. Even though we have such a noble history and rose out of nothing to where we are, we still become the butt of many jokes when people refer to our hillbilly nature.
Yeah.
And you even had like Dick Cheney in 2008 made an inbreeding joke to chuckling reporters at the National Press Club. So we had Cheney's on both sides of our family, and we don't even live in West Virginia, he said.
Yeah.
So we have a bad reputation as far as that goes, we're a poor state when it comes to a lot of things and stuff like that. So that's one of the things you have to overcome is being somebody from West Virginia.
Absolutely. And West Virginia has historically been a place where a lot of immigrants come too. So it's one of those things that maybe that is part of the reason why our history is not celebrated as much, because people aren't always aware of it. They aren't aware of how West Virginia was formed and where it really came from. But that's one of those things that it's very important, and we're here to spread the word.
That's right. We're here to spread the word. What, you know, West Virginia has fared fairly well in this in the COVID-19 outbreak because the people live in rural areas. They're separated. You know, a lot of times people live, your nearest neighbor might be a couple miles away. So people are more remote. They don't get out as much. We don't have very many big cities. I mean, Huntington and Charleston are the two biggest cities in West Virginia, and they're not very big.
No.
So, you know, you don't have to worry about people living right on top of each other and everything. So
that's true. Now, to learn West Virginia history in eighth grade, every West Virginia student takes West Virginia history class.
Yeah, we all, you have to go through and get all that and then take the Golden Horseshoe test at the end of the year.
That's right. The Golden Horseshoe Award is a test, and it's based on how well you know your West Virginia history. And if you get a good grade on it, then you can become a knight or a lady of the Golden Horseshoe.
Yeah, and you get the little Golden Horseshoe to pin on your lapel.
Yeah. Now, it's got a very interesting story about how that name came about. In 1716, the governor of Virginia Colony, Alexander Spotswood, saw the need for exploration of the land west of the Allegheny Mountains, which is West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor organized a party of about 50 men who all adopted the pledge, Sic Jurat Transcendere Monte, which is Latin, you might have guessed. And it means, thus he swears to cross the mountains. And Governor Spotswood presented each member of the party with a small golden horseshoe to commemorate the bravery of those who crossed the mountains into Western Virginia, which began the golden horseshoe tradition. So
I always tried so hard on that thing that I thought, I can do this. I can do this. And I sucked. I didn't do any good. Now, my girls did good on the test when they had to take it, but I sucked. I did terrible.
Did they win the golden horseshoe?
No, they didn't win it, but they did very well. You know, I think that, I forget how that works exactly, but they scored high enough. Yeah, they scored high enough to, you know, do whatever it is that you get the golden horseshoe. I mean, there's not like there's one winner or anything.
No, no.
It's not like a spelling bee or something.
I don't think I won the golden horseshoe. I don't own a golden horseshoe anywhere.
No, I didn't either. I mean, I've been kicked by a few horses, but I don't own any horseshoes, just the imprints.
So it's a pretty prestigious thing here in West Virginia if you're an eighth grader to win the golden horseshoe.
Yeah, yeah, I wanted that bad. Matt Ohl always won those things. I could never beat Matt Ohl.
Oh, Matt Ohl.
Yeah, he always won those things.
Well, you're in luck, because today I thought I would give you the chance, rather than do legal briefs, to compete for the Golden Horseshoe based on me asking you West Virginia trivia questions.
What? Well, that's good news and bad news, because I get another shot at it. But now I probably even know less than I did then.
Well, we'll see.
Oh, no.
So are you ready?
Okay, so this is West Virginia briefs.
West Virginia history.
Brief.
So what is the state motto of West Virginia?
Montani Semper Liberi.
That's right.
Mountaineers are always free.
All right, you're one for one. What is
that's an easy one. That's on everything.
Well, I'm going to give you a few softballs to start out, and then they're going to ramp up.
Oh, okay. All right. Ramps. Did you say ramps? That's our national food. That's our state food is ramps.
What is a ramp, Tommy?
A ramp is a wild onion.
That's right, and they grow in the spring.
Yeah, and they have a festival here, and man, you don't want to be around there because that place smells, both from the ramps and from the output from the ramps.
I was trout fishing at the end of February and along a mountain stream, and I came across a nice little section of ramps, and I picked a few ramps to bring home after doing some trout fishing in the mountains.
I don't like them ramps. I know what they are, but I don't like them. I like onions, but I don't like ramps.
So what is the state bird?
State bird is the cardinal.
That's correct. I think you know more about West Virginia history than you think.
Well, my mother was in the legislature for 20 years over a 40-year span, so I had to help hand out blue books, which is something the legislature hands out to the different schools that has all the information about what the legislature did. So and it also has in the front a lot of those kind of things in it, so that's where I picked it up kind of through osmosis.
What is the state butterfly?
Butterfly.
This is a tough one.
I don't really know, but the only butterfly I know is a monarch, so I'll say monarch.
That's right.
That was luck. That's just the only name I know of a butterfly.
We probably know the monarch butterfly because we have so many of them here because it's our state butterfly.
Oh, well, maybe that's why I know it. I don't know. Now I'm learning some on Animal Crossing.
What is our state fish?
State fish. I don't know that either, but I'll just say the trout.
That's right. It's the brook trout.
Oh, a brook trout.
Yeah, because there's different kinds of trout. There's native rainbow, or there's a native brook trout, and there's rainbow trout, and the rainbow trout are generally placed. We also have brown trout and things like that, but the brook trout is one of our native fish.
Huh. Well, what do you know about that? I guessed another one right.
You did. Well, even a brook clock's right twice a day or something.
Well, that's right.
What is our state flower?
State flower. Oh, the rhododendron.
That's right.
Yeah, I have a couple of those growing out front. That's why I'm growing those. Plus, they're deer resistant, mostly.
Well, we have them in our backyard because ours are not deer resistant. And what is the state insect?
State insect. I know that the mosquito is a state insect for Florida. I hope it's not a house fly for us. Maybe it's the stink bug.
No, it is not the stink bug. Although there are quite a few of those. It's actually the honeybee.
Oh, the honeybee.
Yeah. Stink bugs, I don't remember those growing up, but they're everywhere now.
Oh, I know. Well, first it was ladybugs. Ladybugs were everywhere, and then it was stink bugs. Now, I heard a rumor that the CIA dropped the ladybugs on us for some reason, and then when those became too plentiful, now they drop stink bugs to eat the ladybugs. But I don't know why they swallowed a fly. Perhaps they'll die. I don't know.
That's what those chemtrails are that you see up in the sky. That's actually falling ladybugs and falling stink bugs.
Yeah, but there are tons of them. But so the state insect is the honeybee.
Right.
Hey, there's a song by the Heart, Head in the Heart, that's honeybee. It's a good song. It's out right now.
Do you know what our state mammal is?
Mammal. We have a mammal? Oh, the black bear.
That's right. Interestingly enough, we have a Facebook neighborhood page, and there was a black bear that was just right outside our neighborhood.
Yeah, you don't want to encounter one of those things. I mean, they're not like grizzly bears or anything, but you still don't want to encounter a black bear.
No, I would not want to see a black bear.
I was working in the coal fields in West Virginia on a midnight shift, and one of the guys that I worked with was driving down the road going to the yard office, and a black bear came running out of the woods and ran into the side of his car while he was driving, and it knocked his car sideways in the road, and this bear just sat back and shook his head all around, then got up and walked off.
Wow.
And the guy's car was crushed up in the front so bad that he couldn't even drive it.
There was a pun there, but I don't have it.
He barely made it.
Yeah. What is our state reptile?
Got to be something like the pine rattler or something like that.
It's the timber rattler.
Timber rattler. Well, I wonder if there is a pine rattler. Maybe I meant timber. I just said pine.
Timber. All right. This is going to be a tough one. What is our state food?
The pepperoni roll. It was invented here.
No, it is not the pepperoni roll.
It should be.
Actually, the golden delicious apple.
Oh, it was invented here.
It was invented here.
Yeah. Well, now that you say that, when I lived up in Martinsburg, Musselman was just up the road, and that's a big Musselman applesauce plant, and there's all kinds of orchards up there. So I bet that had something to do with that.
Yep, you're probably right. People love their applesauce here in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And I got to admit, I love applesauce too. I'm a fan.
I did when I was a kid. I don't eat it anymore. I like stuff I can sink my teeth into.
Now, here is the final question. Who was the first person to live in present-day West Virginia on a permanent basis?
I happen to know that. This I actually remember from my eighth grade class. It was Morgan Morgan.
That's right.
And that's who Morgantown is named after.
Yep, that is correct. He moved here in the early 1700s, and allegedly he lived in a hole in a tree. Like, that was his house. He lived in a tree.
Well, that's not surprising. That's what probably why we call it Morgan Hole up there instead of Morgantown. It's a hole, Morgan Hole.
Yeah, you're right. And like you had said, he would fit the pattern of all the people that moved here because he was most likely Welsh, although the records aren't that great. But he came here in the early 1700s from Wales.
Well, he probably knew Sean Connery then. And I think he's Welsh, isn't he?
I think he's Scottish.
Oh, well, how about Tom Jones? He's Welsh. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat?
I don't really know Tom Jones.
You don't remember Tom Jones?
All I know about Tom Jones, I thought he was like a lounge singer in Vegas or something.
Well, he probably was by the time you came along, but he used to be, he was like right up there with like Elvis there for a while.
He was the bee's knees, I tell you what.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. Yeah, well, you know, the only thing that gets me about that is this guy was the first guy to settle in West Virginia, and he evidently had parents that were the least creative parents you could have. You know, you have a baby boy, your name is Morgan. Well, what do you want to name him? Well, let's name him Morgan. That way we won't forget his name. Morgan, Morgan. And his middle name might have even been Morgan. Morgan, Morgan, Morgan. Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
Whenever he heard the name Morgan, he knew he was in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. You know, when they say all three of your names, you know you're in trouble as a kid. But with him, Morgan, 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 you don't know if they're just repeating your first name or what. Or am I in trouble?
Well, I'll tell you what, Tommy, you have impressed me, and I'm sure you've impressed the listeners, too, with your knowledge of West Virginia history.
I didn't even know I knew some of that stuff.
I'm going to go ahead and award you an honorary golden horseshoe for your prowess.
Oh, my God. It only took 70 years for me to earn one. 70. I think that's about how long I've been out of eighth grade, about 70 years. It feels like it.
You look pretty good for your age, then.
Well, by cracky, it's all those golden delicious apples and pepperoni rolls.
They'll keep you young.
That's right.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. I was shocked you knew all those. You just railed them right off.
Well, thank you. I'll be looking for my award in the mail.
Yep. Check's in the mail. I got two of my best guys working on it right now.
Right. And I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help you.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is being a West Virginian. This latest episode made me think about all that is involved with being a West Virginian. It's hard. As a state, for the most part, we are all automatically looked down upon. We are all uneducated, unintelligent, and inbred hillbillies. Most of you have heard the jokes. Or whenever a movie or a TV wants to depict an uneducated rural person, they just make them be from West Virginia. That says it all. This is how we are viewed on a regular basis. Amazingly, I have met many grown people that ask me, "Now, is West Virginia a separate state or just the western part of Virginia?" I tell you what, you name the 50 states and then ask me that. Most young people growing up in West Virginia leave the state after they get an education. I think the stat is like 57% of college graduates that, as soon as they graduate, they leave. For one reason, there are not many good jobs. And then the other is, there is very little hope. West Virginia has been mostly a welfare state for about the last 75 years. I know it will sound political, but it's just a fact. The Democratic Party and Robert C. Byrd figured out back in about the 1950s that if you start making everyone dependent on the government for a paycheck, then all you have to do is keep giving it out and you keep getting reelected. Byrd was in the Senate for like 50 years, and he held the purse strings for the nation, so West Virginia got well fed from the government trough. We got more federal dollars per capita than any other state. We got more from the federal government than what we paid in. So even though we show as strongly red state now, we were a strongly union-led blue state for 75 years. Having all that money coming in, you would think would be a good thing. But all it did was make everybody more dependent on the government and less likely to be ambitious and go out and take care of yourself. That natural bias and snobbery that is cast down on the people of West Virginia can wear on you. A lot leave and claim to be from somewhere else. I always just prepared myself for the jokes that would follow, and I was usually pretty good at giving it back. I remember a redneck in Waycross, Georgia, trying to make fun of me from being from West Virginia. I know we have some hillbillies that are bad, but some of those folks down there make our worst look downright sophisticated. At least we had an interstate and a mall. Those folks had to drive an hour to find either. Of course, there was still the whole Yankee thing, but that is for another thought, another day. I left West Virginia for about 10 years and finally made the decision that I wanted to move back. I had lived in several cities, both big and small, and to tell you the truth, there was no place like home. Huntington is especially a great town to raise kids. There is also a lot to do, and you are right in the center of most major markets that you could drive to in 6 to 8 hours, which really isn't bad. I observed many people that got transferred into Huntington with the railroad when I worked there, and they thought they had gotten dropped off the end of the earth. But after a few years, many chose to retire here, or they moved back here to retire after their career ended elsewhere on the system. The one thing you always hear is how friendly and welcoming the people of this state are. Growing up here, I guess I took that for granted. But after being in other places where you're told, don't smile at anybody that you pass on the street, it's a sign of weakness and they'll kill you. But here, if you smile at a stranger passing on the street, the worst that could happen is that they might just stop and talk to you and ask you how you're doing. So the next time you run across someone from West Virginia, have an open mind and know that you have found someone who will be naturally friendly. You might just be surprised. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.